Good evening, everyone. You're listening to Bootleg Avocado, bringing you stories in the food startup world. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us one more time. So tonight, we're going to cover a lot of different topics, one being fundraising. We're going to talk a little bit about the VC world, talk a little bit about the tech world. We have two special guests tonight, but with every episode, we're going to introduce my friend and colleague, Anthony Nichols. Anthony, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Mario. How are you?
Good, good. Not bad. Tell us just
so,
a little...
So we're going to be talking about money tonight.
Money. How to get money. How to get this money. That's exactly what we're going to do.
I'm definitely going to be listening intently because money is needed. That's for sure.
I think we all need it at some point. Anthony, just give us a little bit of background on you, just kind of what you're working on and what you do and everything else.
So currently right now, I'm a chef and I'm doing restaurant consulting, research and development. And I work with restaurants to develop social media content. Right now, my current client is Chopped and Pressed. They're a fast casual company that's looking to bring high quality food to gas stations all over the country.
Cool.
So while you pick up your gas, you can get a kale salad. What do you think about that?
Wow, that's good. What about like a beef Wellington or something?
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Okay.
I think maybe we might need some cash for that, so that's sort of fun. It's really gonna work.
Well, that's why we have Elise on our show tonight. So let's intro to actually, Anthony, the name of your company.
So, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Please visit us at speakfeast.com and on Instagram at speak_feast. .com. Not .com. That's the website, but SpeakFeast.
You mean at?
Yeah, at SpeakFeast on Instagram, and we're on Twitter as well.
Got it. Okay, that's a long plug, but okay, we got it.
All right.
So, with this episode, we were lucky enough to have two guests. So tonight, first intro will be to Elise Barros. She is an associate at First Rock Capital, working in the VC world. Elise, how are you doing tonight?
Awesome. How are you?
Cool. So give us your 30-second spiel on what you do and, you know, where you're at and all those things.
Who am I?
Who are you? Yes.
Who am I? So my name is Elise, as Mario said, and I work at First Rock Capital, which is an early stage VC firm and fund, mm-hmm. both.
Yeah.
And I'm the associate, so previous experience was grad school in Buenos Aires, and I worked for a startup for a few years. And then when that folded, as some will, I wanted to get into the VC world and help startups not fail like we did. So that's, here we are.
That's good.
Cool. And also, we're also lucky enough to have a fellow entrepreneur in the tech world, Hernan Aracena. Hernan, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a co-founder of Effortless.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm the co-founder of Effortless, an app that helps you stay focused. Before that, I started startup around education. We were teaching programming and design in South America in Spanish. We had 1,000 students. Basically during that period of time, I was learning a lot about retention and engagement and the math behind, you know, what takes a student to finish a class, to finish a whole course, you know. So that's my experience.
Cool. So we can definitely ask you questions on your stories of failing and recovering and all those things.
Awesome.
So with every guest, we did this last time, is we'll start the conversation with a little icebreaker, something I like to call an empathy question. I have some empathy cards in front of me. I'm gonna randomly pick a card for each one of you guys, and then we'll go from there. So give me 5 seconds and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Bootleg Avocado. So, where we left off was the dreaded old empathy question. So this one, Elise, ladies go first. Just let me tell you when to stop. I'm shuffling.
Oh God, stop.
All right. Oh, okay, this is a good one. How has your past shaped who you are?
All right, we're getting truthful. God, should have taken a shot or something before.
I'm drinking some wine right now, so.
I'm having some scotch, so I'm ready.
There you go.
Wait, I don't have a memo for any of this. Okay, so how has my past shaped me? I think because I have failed so much, that has shaped a lot of who I am. You know, I went to grad school, as I said, to do my MBA in Buenos Aires. And when I went, I didn't really speak Spanish. I thought I was fluent. Like, I think many people from Texas think they're fluent in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought the perfect way would be to start taking grad school courses in Spanish, which was not. But no, I think it's just failing and learning how to fail quick and move on and not get discouraged. So it's taught me how to be a hustler. And you know, I didn't go to Stanford. I'm not an engineering degree. I don't have one. So I'm a woman, and I think that has helped me get into venture capital.
Cool. You're resilient.
Yeah, hustler.
A lot of no's, eventually a yes down the road.
Venture capitalist hustler.
You see hustler. I like that. I like that.
Good, I like that.
Good response. All right, Hernan, you are up. You let me know when to stop shuffling.
You can stop now.
All right. all right, here we go. How do you build endurance?
Wow. By compounding, I think. Like, the power of compounding things, you know, and building things little by little, but, you know, keep growing them. And don't get desperate, you know, just keep building, make something great little by little. Have a small group of people that are really passionate like you about something that you really care, and just keep building something great.
Cool. Good answer there. So those weren't so bad, right?
Those are pretty good.
Not
all. Yeah.
Those are really good.
Yeah. So Elise, let's just backtrack a little bit. You being in the VC world, you being a woman, you kind of going from the startup world to the VC world. Tell me about that transition. What did you learn just, you know, being on both sides of it? What do you prefer?
So many questions in one. Okay, so how did I get into it? I was working at a startup called Dinner Lab. Actually with you, Mario.
Yep, I remember you.
And
Dinner Lab.
DL.
Yeah. Anyway, so when Dinner Lab folded, I think a lot of things went wrong. We don't have, that's probably a different podcast. But one thing was, I also, when I was there, I was part of the investor relations side, and some of our big investors who we thought were a shoo-in to invest in our next round actually pulled out at the last minute. And I didn't really understand that. And working at a startup, you know, it's crazy. And I kept wondering, who are these bozos investing in this company that's absolutely crazy? Any startup, I think. And so when Dinner Lab folded, I wanted to get into venture capital and learn the other side. There must be some reason why people invest in startups. And so that's when I made the decision to kind of switch over to the other side of the pond. And luckily, it was a leap of faith. I found this incredible team where the founder was a startup hustler also. He founded Groove Shark, and they actually hired me because I had failed so much. So what do I prefer more? Honestly, I prefer working in a startup a little more. It's a completely different rush, and you are creating.
So, Elise, how did you make the transition to the VC world? Let's say, you know, it's someone who's, you know, coming from the startup world. What do they need to prepare themselves to do? What sort of things should they learn beforehand in order to just kind of get ready to be in that environment?
Great. Absolutely. So the VC world is very big on Twitter, very big on Twitter. So I would become very active on Twitter. If you do land an interview with a VC firm, they are going to want to know what your vertical specialty is and where you see the market go. You know, vertical specialty being, are you food tech? Are you biotech? You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And where do you see the industry going? And what are some startups that they should be looking at that they've never heard before? So that's going to be your interview. So
Elise, I'm sorry to cut you off a little bit, but
some newsletters, know what's going on. Become friends with founders. Meet as many founders as you can. I actually got into the VC world probably from a very untraditional side door. I applied after Dinner Lab folded, I found this startup called Jabbatical, which is Jobbatical. And they offer positions in different startups across the world. You know, from anything from a fertilizer company in the Philippines to, I don't know, do sales and marketing, whatever, at a startup in Belgium. I happened to find this VC position in Colombia. And so that's personally how I got into it.
Got it.
I would say that for the companies that you are, for the VC funds that you're interested in, see their check size. See what stages that they're investing in. See which verticals they look at. Research the team. Is the team someone that you're going to learn from and who's going to motivate you? And that's where I would start.
Okay.
Hey, Mario, can we talk about failure a little bit? Because Elise mentioned, failure a couple of times. And I thought that was, you know, pretty important for a lot of people to hear, especially people listening to this podcast, that, you know, you have to fail in order to understand how to succeed. Can she maybe elaborate a little bit more on failure and how that's important when kind of going to these VCs?
Elise, you got that?
Yeah, I did. So failure, what I've learned from failure is that the answer is never no. I don't know if that's a good motto to live by, but that's that the answer is never no. So working at a startup, I did permits and licenses for a pop-up company. We would do pop-up dinners where alcohol is being donated and half-cooked food is being transported and the events never happen in one place. So doing permit and licensing, my job was to get the company not shut down in that event. Mm-hmm. And you're having to jump through hoops. And there's always some workaround or always something to where you can fix it. You kind of have to take a step back and reassess everything and figure out where is a side door that you can go through. When I was a grad student in Buenos Aires, getting my student visa was impossible, absolutely impossible. So instead, I just traveled to Uruguay every 3 months or something. I took a little ferry over there and came back. And so I think, and failure, like not understanding what my grad school classes were about and having to go home and restudy everything because it was in a different language. And in fact, the teacher wasn't talking about a mermaid, but they were talking about a siren. So for anyone who understands Spanish, you'll see how that can be easily confused.
Gotcha.
What else? And then for VC, VC is tough to get into. And I got into it in an untraditional way, but I think if you have a VC in mind that you really like, what are some things that the VC is interested in? Research the associates, research the analysts, research the partners. If they're really interested in, I don't know, blockchain, and they have a background doing volunteer work in private equity in Africa, send them some articles on, hey, I don't know if you've seen this, think it's really cool. Blockchain are helping Syrian refugees with, face recognition. And what do you think about that?
Mm-hmm.
And keep kind of emailing some of these people every now and then so that you become top of mind. And they don't remember in the end how they know you, but they just know, oh, Elise, yeah, she's a cool girl. And it's all about relationships. Never burn a bridge. That's my long-winded answer.
Okay. So, Anon, given your experience, so you're an entrepreneur yourself in the tech world. So what's kind of your interaction where, obviously you had to raise money and raise funds for your startups. You know, how did you approach it on your end and kind of get your foot in the door, at least get funding on the startups that you've been involved with?
So in my last experience, what I was trying to do is I was trying to get mentors, right? So I was hustling really hard, not for founding, but like for people who could teach me things that I didn't understand at all, mm-hmm. right? I was a programmer, I knew programming, I could hack things and make prototypes. But when it came to the business side and understanding design, I didn't have any idea. So what I did is I surrounded myself around people that they had a lot of experience on online businesses and tech startups, and then they became my investors, mm-hmm. at the end. So, they saw me, I will go every Friday and ask them, I asked them, give me just 15 minutes every Friday. I will go there, ask questions, and they will see me working and, growing. So, at the end, I think my idea was to show that I was a doer, that I could do things, make things happen,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not just a talker, So I was hustling really hard. I was charging people and making money without a domain. I will use a generic domain because I didn't want to spend any money on anything that wasn't related to the core business and the value for the customer.
Mm-hmm. What was the core business actually? What was it all about?
So I wanted to learn all this, right? I wanted to learn how to raise capital, how to make my own website from scratch. So what I did is I started interviewing people. And when I was interviewing them and asking questions, I was learning myself. And then I was selling those courses in Latin America. Like, I will put all kind of content around it, and I will put a landing page, and that's it. So the way I got started is I found this guy that was making a kind of a Spanish class in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. in San Francisco. I put it online. I didn't know this guy. I sold like 50 tickets for a course, online. And then I told him that I didn't know him, but I sold all these tickets for him. And if he will accept half of the money, I will do it. Otherwise, I will return the money to the people, and I will, I was validating my idea. So he was really happy. He told me, that of course he will take the money. And I told him that I had a platform, but I didn't. So I told a friend, listen, it's Friday, and we need to launch something Monday, because I said that this class is Monday, and this guy is willing to do it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have anything, so this guy made it. Like, we made something together during the weekend. But then people was complaining because it was really ugly and it was, didn't function properly. So I talked to a designer, listen, we have this prototype, we have customers, we have a provider, but we don't have a designer and it looks really bad. You're in this world that probably you don't know what you're doing or whatever, So just come here, let's make something people love and something people like. He designed it. And then I went to the investor, the mentor that, gave me the assignment, and I said, I have a designer and a programmer and a professor and also customer, so I want to keep growing.
So that's what I do.
Okay. So definitely a lot of maneuvering through that and convincing people, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, a lot of firms are investing in you, and they want to know who the people are involved. You know, who's the team? That's, you know, that's probably at least 70% of the success rate there. You know, you need to know who the team is, believe in the founder, make sure that's someone who has the drive to really kind of make things happen more than anything else.
Definitely the perseverance too.
What's that, Anthony? I'm sorry.
It's just listening to Hernan and Elisa's story, it's, you know, the word that just keeps coming up is perseverance, and just sort of, you know, just having that inner will to just continue and find a way.
Right.
That just makes people successful. And I know that some of the people that the successful people I've worked for, some of which are multimillionaires, the one thing I always took away from them is the fact that ever take no for an answer.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, the more opportunities you are presented to you, I think you just take all of them, you know, and sure. Then figure out how to do it more than anything else, you know?
Absolutely.
So, Elise, going back to you. So let's say I'm an entrepreneur trying to get some funding. What's the type of lingo, or what? How do I kind of maneuver around that environment? Like, how do I reach out to these people? What should I say? What shouldn't reveal? How do I, you know, really make those connections as well?
For me, I think the best way for a founder to get in front of their dream team of investors is not by, and this is just my opinion, this whole thing is my opinion, so everyone is different, but it's not by cold emailing an investor saying, hey, I have this great product that's groundbreaking. You know, great, so does everyone else. It was getting in front of other founders. So if I received an introduction from the founder of one of our portfolio companies, you know, a company that we have already invested in, they said, hey, Elise, I really want to introduce you to this guy, you know, whoever, he has a startup. I will always, and I don't know if other investors are like this, but I will always take, if it's an introduction from a portfolio, from a founder of a portfolio company, I won't just respond to an email. I will take a phone call with this new founder. Out of respect for the founder of the portfolio company. And two, because I believe in the team of that portfolio company enough that I really respect who they are going to introduce me to. So if you can get an introduction from a founder in that VC's portfolio company, that's huge. And then two, if you can get, other ways I would get introductions to founders that I'd always take, if it was an introduction from another investor. That doesn't weigh as heavily as getting an introduction from another founder. But if I get an introduction from another investor that I'm kind of friends with, I'll always take that call. You know, the idea is finding the next big startup. So getting in front of investors would be, I guess, reaching out to them. Well, back. My big answer would be from an introduction from another founder. Things that I look for when we're on that phone call is, I want to know who their team is, because First Rock invested in early stage startups. So I want to know how you guys know each other. Is it that you went on the Tinder version of Find a Founder and this is now your CTO? Because that's not what I want to see. I want to see that you've known the CTO, you've known your founding team for a long time, so that when shit, I don't know, another word for shit, hits the fan.
Shit's good.
Yeah, shit fits there. Let's go back to, I didn't know there was a Tinder for founders.
Well, I don't think I've heard before that there is some sort of like meet a founder
got
thing.
It.
I've heard other founders say that, and calls I've had with them, and that's a huge red. You can't. It's like, can you shop for a husband or a wife? I guess many people do, but I want to know that you've known your team for a long time, and that when things get really tough and when something's not working, or you're, I don't know, y'all aren't going to break up because you actually don't know each other at all. You know, I don't want the founding team to dissolve. So I want to know that y'all have a strong tie together, that maybe y'all have worked together before. I want to know the background of the team. So I think, I don't know what the statistic is, but some large number, 60-70% of startups fail. So I'm not actually investing in your idea. I mean, I guess I am, but I'm mostly investing in you and your brain, so that if your startup fails, you and your founding team are going to come up with something new. Like, if I was investing in Evnan and Ohala, his first startup, it's not that I'm investing in Ohala, which I guess I could have been, but I'm investing in Evnan because I know he's such a hustler and he's going to come up with another startup. Another thing that I look for is, have you lived the problem? And when I say have you lived the problem, it's, did you start the startup because you were so frustrated with some problem that you had in your life that is why you started it? You started it out of passion and pain in your own experience. One, because that's going to drive you to fix this problem and to keep going with the startup. And also, you know your target audience because you are your target audience. Versus, I don't drink coffee, but I really noticed that people wait a long time in line for coffee. I'm going to make an app.
Right. So
I don't.
Yeah. So you're really talking about practicality. Like, at the end of the day, it needs to be practical, correct?
Not that it needs to be practical, but I wanted that you started your startup because you're solving your own problem. Like, Hernan, why did you start Effortless?
Yeah, well, I felt like social media was driving me nuts. Like, I was checking my phone every 3 minutes. It was like, I don't know if addiction is the best word, but it was making my life sad, you know? I love playing music. I love doing great things. And I feel like my attention span was getting worse. I will get a book and read it like a little bit, and then check my phone again. And it's like, you know what? I really need to fix this. I need to find a way for myself. Even if the startup doesn't work, I don't care. I want it for me, and I want it to fix this addiction to the phone and social media. So I want something to stay focused.
Right. So for the people that don't know, what does Effortless do? What's the concept behind it?
So it's really simple. So my biggest problem was that I would get distracted, and I didn't realize that I was distracted, right? I tried many tools, something that blocked social media and all this, but I realized that it wasn't the solution. The solution was, if I'm going to check social media or Twitter or whatever, I need to have some time. I can do it 3 minutes, 5 minutes, go back to work and do great work, right? Stay focused. So what I did is, I created a list of things that I was going to do today, and then I put some minutes, and then I have to be working on that. If I'm not working on that and I get distracted, it will remind me, you know, and bring me back to the work that I was doing. So at the beginning, it's a little bit hard because it's like you get the alarm all the time, but then you realize that, you know, that you have to stay focused, and then you keep working, and then you start doing like deep work, and you start getting, you know, more work on. I didn't want to work all night, all day and all night because I was distracted. So now I work 8 hours, but I have quality work. So that's what we do. It's like a little Mac app that you install. It will help you though.
Cool. So we're going to take a quick little break here. And not only when we get back, I want to hear about your fail story and, you know, how to really talk about, you know, what things actually went wrong, but also things that entrepreneurs should focus on, things like KPIs, retention, and all that stuff when we get back.
Awesome.
Welcome back to Bootleg Avocado. We have Hernan Aracena, co-founder of Effortless. Hernan, let's jump into your story a little bit more. Let's more particularly the first startup that you had. What kind of things, you know, made you very mindful this time around as far as, you know, making sure it kind of grows to the potential that it should, things like KPI, retention, that sort of thing?
Yeah, so my previous startup was an educational startup. Basically, we made something like Netflix, where you pay $10 a month, mm-hmm. and you have access to unlimited classes. We have 10,000 different classes from programming to design, digital marketing in Spanish. So so we reached, you know, we got to 300,000 students at the end, and we made over $1 million in sales. And the biggest issue, the thing that I realized, and now I understand it much better, is that it doesn't matter how much people you acquire, how much people you bring into the platform or your business. If you cannot mm-hmm. retain them, you know, if you cannot retain and engage that people, then it's, you know, you need to start all over again. You know, like if I acquire 100 people this week, and next week I need to grow 10%, if I'm retaining, you know, 90% of that people, then mm-hmm. I just need like 20 more people to grow, you know, right. 10%. But if I don't, if I just focus on acquisition and then I lose everybody, I have to bring 110 people.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, it was really tough to retain people. I did everything possible, you know, anything that was in my hand to get it. I, at the beginning, I always, you know, I always thought it was a marketing problem. I always thought, you know, it's an acquisition problem, but I became really good at it. Like we had videos with 10 million views, 8 million views, and it was all organic. I didn't pay like Facebook ads or Google ads or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I became really, you know, efficient in acquisition, but not in retention, and it's not sustainable. That was, you know, it doesn't matter how much people I could acquire. If I couldn't retain them, I will start all over again, you know, less than 5 months.
Right. So what made the product not be, like I said, sticky enough, you know, because you want a product that is mm-hmm. sticky, that really does work with the customer, that the customer will be, it'll be part of their life, everyday life, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what I understood later on, you know, is that it's better to have 100 people that loves your product, like they really are really passionate about your product. That, you know, doesn't care. I think, you know, one of the problems was a segmentation problem. Like I had to, you know, I had to find the right people at the beginning, like the group of people that really needed this platform. And it wasn't, you know, at the beginning, I thought it was anybody that wanted to learn programming from scratch, but it wasn't. I realized later on that people that, you know, will stay much longer and will keep using the platform over and over again were people that they are ready, you know, they were programmers or they were into marketing, but they wanted to learn the digital skill and they have to be up to date, you know, every month. So they will never cancel the subscription. Mm-hmm. But it was a lack of focus. It was a lack of understanding who is the people that need this the most, right? Like who are, you know, it's like the difference between a painkiller and a vitamin, you know, like mm-hmm. I think like for most of the people that were using the platform, it was like a vitamin, but we needed people, you know, that needed like painkillers, people that really needed the platform.
Right.
And I didn't focus on that. I was trying to bring anybody who was able to pay the subscription.
Right. And that's what you need to do, at least in the beginning, is really kind of bring people on mm-hmm. just to try the product. That way it's, you know, it's at least in, you know, they're trying it out. Maybe it'll be ingrained in their lives or whatnot, but you know, it's a risk definitely in the beginning. So Hernan, let's take a quick little break. We're going to jump into other things like KPIs and, you know, other things that entrepreneurs should actually look out for. We'll be right back. All right, Hernan, let's jump into things like KPIs. So what exactly are KPIs? What are the sort of things that you started really identifying within, you know, your first startup that you really need to start tracking and identifying?
Got it. So my at the beginning, I believe that
the most important KPI is retention. And how you calculate that is if you bring 100 people today, and this is a product that people use in the weekly basis, you want to know how many of those 100 people came back, right? Mm-hmm. So those are cohorts. And basically what you do is you see cohorts, and what you're looking for is a percentage of people that keep coming back constantly. You know, even if it's 40%, 30%, but that 30% keep coming every week, that's great. You know, if your product is weekly, if it's Airbnb, it will be every year. If it's a product for rent, you know, it's every month. Mm-hmm. But you need to make sure that people keep coming back. So that, for me, that's the most important metric at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And the way I try to solve, you know, this retention problem is I divide it in three different stages. The first stage is when they don't know you. So you need to understand who they are, where they come from, what they tried before your product. You know, mm-hmm. like right. If you were WhatsApp, maybe BlackBerry was before WhatsApp or, you know, any or SMS. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand that, to understand what is the pain point. Then you need an aha moment. You need a magic moment where they realize, whoa, this is amazing. Like
right.
For Uber, it will be when a car arrives in 5 minutes, you know. In Facebook, it will be 7 friends in 10 days. Mm-hmm. For Dropbox, it's when you put a file in a folder. For Pinterest, it's when you save a pin. You know, you have that aha moment, like, you know, if in Pinterest you put you save a pin, there is a 50% probability that you come back next week. So
gotcha.
You need to focus on the one value and the one thing that correlates to retention. After you have that aha moment, then you have to focus on habits, right? Like mm-hmm. if you are a restaurant that, you know, or, you know, a product that people use every day, you want to make sure that every time they have the trigger, you know, every time I need a car, you want to make sure that I press the button of Uber and it comes, so I get the reward and I keep doing this over and over again.
Got it.
If I have this problem with Uber right now, that sometimes here in Colombia, I press the button and they don't come. So you break the habit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, I don't get my reward, so I don't do this again. And then I start taking cabs again or Uber's competition. So for me, those are the three different stages. And it's really important to treat each stage, you know, separately, right?
Like right.
you need to make sure that for the first impression, for the aha moment, you need to make sure that you focus on the core product value, whatever that is.
Yeah.
You need to focus on that and get that as fast as possible.
Got it.
So,
And that comes with a lot of, the beta stage of a product, the product development portion, really understanding if this is a product that has legs, is it going to be sticky, is it going to be part of someone's live, you know, everyday life. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things that, you know, that really we can apply to the restaurant scene, the food scene. Right now there are a lot of tech companies getting involved in the restaurant scene, helping out with restaurants and showing them what KPIs they should be tracking. So like anything on a level in which sales are driven, they have real-time data right now in some restaurants in which you can see how the sales is actually being generated throughout the night. Are servers actually pushing bottles? Are certain servers, you know, really gravitating towards certain parts of the menu versus others, and it should be actually focusing on the specials and really driving revenue that way. So right now, you know, there's a lot of change definitely in the food scene, and, you know, really understanding what KPIs are and what they are, you know, really helps to really maximize revenue in restaurants right now. So Hernan, let's take a quick little break. Let's jump back into a little bit more lessons learned, and we'll take it from there. Welcome back to Bootleg Avocado. So Hernan, take us through, you know, your last, lessons learned as far as your first startup is concerned.
Got it. Yeah, so, the last lesson was a concept called mounting loss, which is basically the more you use the product, the better it gets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in Facebook, the more friends you have, the more pictures you upload, the better the experience gets, because Facebook knows what you like and what you don't like.
Right.
Same thing with Twitter. The more followers you have, it's harder for me to leave, and the experience get better because I get better information.
Right.
So I think it's really important after the aha moment and after the core product value, you know, mm-hmm. it's really important to understand how can I do something in my product that the more people use it, the better it gets. Because at the end of the day, that's going to translate in the lifetime value of the customer. It's not that they come and they, you know, just eat a sandwich, but if they come every week and they keep eating a sandwich, lifetime value is going to be, I think for a startup, the lifetime value is something like $14,000 or something like that. Yeah, okay. $16,000, I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, yeah, it's great. Like, when you have a customer that the more it goes, the more you create, like, a relationship, it's harder to live.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember in San Francisco, I had this great experience. I went to this Italian restaurant that I was going, like, every month. It was kind of, you know, and not expensive, but like it wasn't like a restaurant to go every day. And I remember, like, the first time it was fine. The second time, the chef saw me. He asked my name, you know. The third time, he knew my name. He knew my name. And, you know, when I was waiting, he gave me, like, a little wine, you know, glass of wine. And, you know, this is the thing that once you create this relationship, you feel important. You feel great. And it's part of the experience.
Yeah.
That is hard to replicate if I go to a new restaurant. So that kind of relationship, you know, after you get to the hammer, which is great food, you need that kind of understanding of.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's going to play in the lifetime value and all the retention that is going to bring that experience in.
Right, right. So, I mean, I think we talked about this last night, but you know Salt Bae, right? The guy who was very famous on the Instagram. So, like, his whole mm-hmm. thing was, you know, he kind of rode the wave of social media, like the trend in which, you know, he was an iconic person that came out of Turkey. You know, I'm sure he comes from, like, humble beginnings, and, you know, he went for it. You know, he really swung for the fences and kind of rode the whole popularity of, you know, just his brand itself, you know. And the thing is, like, his brand is, you know, is iconic, and, you know, he's very hospitable, in which, like, you go to his restaurant, he's there kind of, you know, doing his salt thing, he'll cut the steak for you and all that stuff. And that's kind of the draw right now, you know. Like, it only can take you so far, but I appreciate the effort he's doing to carry that, you know, 15 seconds of fame as long as he can. You know, like, he opened up Miami, he opened up New York recently, and the reviews, you know, have been terrible. No, as far as, like, the quality of the meat and the food and all that stuff, but service, you know, having him kind of serve you, do his own, you know, song and dance, you know, that's kind of the experience that you had at the restaurant, correct? You know, that type of, like, now I want to come back, this is my spot, and this and that, you know, like, I think there are parts of it. It is very a big part of the business model. It should be, but it needs to last long. You know, like, I don't see this business model with Salt Bae lasting that long. But, you know, he's riding the wave, so he should definitely do it. Cool. Well, next segment we're gonna jump back into the VC world. Just a little bit more about that, and then, you know, we'll have some. Closing questions, and we'll take it from there. But since you're here, you know, you're Colombian, you're from Colombia, we're gonna actually listen to a little Colombian music on our way out. Like I said, when we come back, a little Carlos Vives, I'm sure you know him. When we come back, we're gonna get right back into this VC world and take it from there. So thank you, Hernan. We'll talk in the next segment.
Thank you.
You could sing along. Woo! Welcome back to Bootleg Avocado. We're discussing fundraising, the VC world, and the tech world. Some lessons learned and everything else. We have Elise Barros and Hernan Aracena joining us tonight.
let's get back to, you know, kind of the VC world. Elise, so in your eyes, the pitch deck, how important is it? How important is the business model? What type of materials should, you know, any founder or entrepreneur really get, like, have ready? Because from my experience, you know, what I've learned is what they want is a roadmap of, you know, the first couple rounds of funding. So that way they can see that, you know, you kind of done the homework and kind of understand what, you know, what they're going to be asking down the road. But, you know, on your end, you know, what are your thoughts?
All right. So one, every fund is different. Every venture capital fund is different. So what I look for may not be the same as what First Mark Capital, which sounds like First Rock, but anyways, may not be what the same as another VC looks for. For us, what I was looking for, to me, what mattered most was actually how did I get in touch with this VC, with the startup? I didn't spend a ton of time looking, reading the pitch deck. I would go back if I needed references. So at the end of the month for our fund specifically, I would bring in, you know, the top people I wanted to present, and I maybe use their KPIs, whatever. So in a pitch deck, though, to go back, what I'm concerned about is, like I said before, who the team is. I want to see your names, a couple bullet points on you, what experience you have, and I want to know the problem you're solving. How did you come up with this problem? I want to know what your growth is. So like Hernan said, I don't want to see, I have a 30% growth in the last year. Well, cool. You know, maybe you had a great first month, but ever since then you've been trickling down. So I want to see over maybe the last 3 months or over the last quarter, how has your growth changed month per month?
Well,
and then also,
yeah. Elise, what if you're a very early stage startup? You know, like you're not going to have that data's not there. Let's say you have like a tech product and you're developing the beta and you need funding just to get through the beta. Like there isn't that history.
Yeah. So I would want to see daily active users. I would want to see, like right now, Hernan for Effortless, they're in beta and they are tracking. I'm not even answering this, but I'm going to say what I think you're tracking. I'm not the founder of your company. I'm going to talk about it. He's tracking like how many sections of 10 minutes does each user spend on it. So page views don't matter. You know, like, great, I have 1,000 page views. Well, I don't care. I want to know how much time are people spending on that or when do they return. So it can be super early. We invested in a company that landed 4 clients in a month. So it doesn't have to be astronomical answers. I just want to see that the retention is increasing or your user base, even if it's tiny, is increasing over and over and it's continuing to that upward hockey stick. What I do not care about is I don't want to see your financial plan because that's really great you put it together, but I guarantee it's wrong. You can't predict the future, and whatever you predict, it's not really going to be accurate because a pipe is going to bust or your CTO is going to leave or, you know, something. I don't really care about what deals you have in the works. You know, like, oh, we're in talks with, I don't know, Neiman Marcus. All right, well, it hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. So... Mm-hmm. A big red flag that I also look at is, and I don't know when it's not tech. I'm just talking about tech-based startups, can be food tech or whatever. When I look at the like equity split of the company, what's a huge red flag is when I see that the CEO has 100% and the CTO has nothing. Or the CEO has 80% and the CTO has 3% and... I don't know, the other 7% is like given to his brother or something.
Oh, okay.
What nice. I want to see is that for us, this is only for us, is that you and your CTO and mostly you and your CTO, if not maybe some of your other founders, if the equity split is somewhat even. Because when, you know, that might be fine now, you know, we're fighting the good fight, but especially with the tech products, I want your CTO to stay there, who designed the whole product. So maybe when you're getting up to your Series A and upward rounds and your evaluation of your company is getting larger and you're raising more money and now only having 3% of the company, that's not going to pay off in the end. Even though you're there just as long as the other CEO is there, as an investor, I'm foreseeing that as shit hitting the fan again and the founders split up or causing a big quarrel. So that's a huge red flag is the equity split. And then I think I mentioned before, just how does the team know each other? Mm-hmm. And especially when you are fundraising, you should be raising for 18 months of runway. Runway means that how much, you know, cash you're going to need, how much cash you're going to have left. And the idea is that it takes about 3 months to close around. It's a very hard process. Well, you could close around much quicker, but usually it's a very hard process. The CEO's away, you're pitching. It's a full-time job. No one likes to do it. So I want you to be raising for anywhere between 15 to 18 months so that you don't just do it for 8 months and then next summer, you know, in 8 months from now, we're back doing this again.
Right, but it depends on, I mean, tech rounds are a lot bigger than, you know, some food startups, correct? I mean, tech rounds, what, you're doing 5 to 10?
No, so we're early stage, so we were doing small rounds. I mean, not rounds, but we were investing maybe 50 grand and maybe the round is anything from 250 to maybe they're raising a million. So the rounds aren't huge.
Got it. Okay. But eventually...
From what we're investing in.
Right, right. Hernan, from your experience, what type of funding are rounds are you familiar with?
Yeah, so we raised a seed round in the last... Startup, it was $500,000.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, basically, I try to keep the pitch kind of simple. Mm-hmm. Something like, you know, we are effortless. I'm making an app that helps people stay focused. We launched in November. Mm-hmm. We have been growing 18% week by week. I have stayed focused at 60,000 minutes. Last week, we had our first user that used the app for 38 hours in a week.
Wow.
It's insane, yeah.
That person must be completely disorganized.
Or like,
major ADD.
Their life has changed. really changed someone's life.
Yeah. So yeah, something really simple. I focus a lot on the users. I remember one of the first investors of Blue Water, you know Blue Water, right?
The coffee?
The coffee shop, yeah.
Yeah.
So Flickr, the founder of Flickr, was one of the first investors of Blue Water.
Okay.
And she was talking that the biggest, you know, because a restaurant is different and a coffee shop is different.
Yeah.
But I heard that, you know, she said that she was, we'll go there like some days and we'll see how passionate the customers were, right? Like, I was a fanatic of Blue Bottle. Blue Bottle means some incredible thing. I have this story that I would go there every day when I live in San Francisco. You know, they know me, they knew my name, it was insane. The relationship was insane. And then I had a meeting with an investor. And they didn't allow me to make the line. It's like, no, please come here. When I was trying to face like your money's not good here. And it's like, I was, you know, this is a little thing, you know, especially it's nothing. It's like, what, right now, like $5, something like that. But those little details for me was incredible because they knew I was a recurring customer, right? And my lifetime value in Blue Bottle was, I don't know, insane. Like I was going every day, three times a day. So...
You gotta get your crack. your crack coffee.
Big fan, man. Yeah, I was I'm a big fan. So I like the story because she, you know, she was talking about how the community, right? They saw that customers were part of the community. They saw that the product was great. And it, even though it was the early stage, I think it was the shopping mall, like the small one, I don't remember. But she decided to invest because of that passion in the product and in the customer. So, I mean, I don't know the whole story, but that's, maybe that helps.
Cool.
And I think, one last thing, I think if you look, a lot of founders will spend hours and hours on putting a blue border instead of a red border on your pitch deck. If you look at some of the pitch decks from some of the greatest startups, if you look at the beginning pitch deck of Airbnb, you know, well, you can Google it. They're super simple. So I think adding a lot of pictures and everything, you have to think that these investors, it's their job. They look at pitch decks all the time, all the time. So you have only a few seconds to impress them. So get to the point. Don't add stars with text in it, with arrows and, you know.
No, that's a really great point. I've seen a lot of PowerPoints or pitch decks out there that are just bells and whistles, but really not the data that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And just back to you. So both of your businesses were out of Colombia, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Cool. So I guess from your perspective, where do you see like the greatest opportunity right now? And like what sector? I mean, obviously you are more on the tech end, but also like, also what part of the world, you know, mm-hmm. South America aside, or even including South America, like what do you see at least a trend or where people should, you know, there'll be a shift to get involved or invest in?
I mean, I really love products like the toothbrush test, you know, like products that people use constantly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious about how money's gonna change. Like, I live here in Colombia, and you know, I have a Bank of America account, and it's insane. Like the, you know, when I use the card, it shows me like a lot of money for any transaction, and I get like a really unfair rate. So it's insane. It's insane, like how to move, you know, using money so hard, even at this moment. So I'm really curious. You know, I would love to know how these cryptocurrencies are gonna end up. I know like there's a lot of speculation, but I know like it's like a long time ago. Here in Medellin, I went to a little store and they were accepting bitcoins, and I bought a bunch of candies, right? candies is extremely expensive. Jesus, this is the most expensive chocolate I've got in my life. But you know, I was really intrigued about the transaction part, right? Like how the experience is gonna change in my coffee shop. So I was telling the guy, listen, with a smart contract, or you know, we can make this experience seamless. You know, I come here every day. I have a location device like my phone, you know, and I can pay you without giving you money. Like my cell phone can communicate with your POS. And this can be a really beautiful experience, you know, like I just get my coffee, talk to you, and we take the money out of the way, and it will charge it to my phone. So things like that, I think, are going to be really interesting, you know, even in the service industry or the food industry. I think taking that part out, when you use an Uber and you don't use, you know, any kind of money, you know, no one will, like, you use a credit card, but you don't have to take the cell phone out or anything, you know, everything is connected. So with Bitcoin, I think that's gonna happen not just in, you know, things like Uber, but it's gonna be great for the food industry, like for restaurants. I think it's gonna be amazing because it's gonna make an experience like your family, like it used to be, you know, like we just see it. It's a great service, and it's, I don't know, those kind of little details, I think, are gonna be great. I'm gonna be really awesome. So I'm really, you know, I would love to know what kind of cryptocurrencies are going to work, yes. Which one are going to be useful, not just for speculation, but like for people to use it, and what kind of use people are going to have with those, you know, like kind of software and money.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just crazy that there's a currency out there that's not regulated. I mean, it's like, all right, how much is this worth? Okay, this is worth this, I guess. You know, like, no one's regulated, which I think it's great in that there is that potential for that, another type of currency. But I think the beauty of it, or like the value and all that, is the blockchain itself, you know, like the way that you can really kind of build value off that more than anything else. Mm-hmm. Like the Bitcoin stuff, I mean, it is what it is right now. It's the hottest thing, but still, I think the value is more in the blockchain itself. Elise, what were you going to say? Yeah. What were you going to say?
Everyone's talking about cryptocurrency, but I completely agree with you, Mario, that the cool part, yes, it's the cryptocurrency, but it's the blockchain.
Yeah.
And especially something that I'm super interested in right now. And it's so cool that we're alive to see all this happening. You know, I'm sure our kids in 20 years are going to be like, Mom, what? you know what? Like, you know how to dial in AOL? What's AIM? You know, like, do-do-do.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that don't even know what that is yet.
Anyway, so with the potential that blockchain has for developing countries absolutely blows my mind. So say, I mentioned it earlier that say you're a refugee in this Syrian refugee camp, and this is super, super watered down, but great. Okay, Mario, you have $50 to spend at the refugee market. Okay, well, you're not handling the money. And when you go, it's, okay, Mario, great. You spend $10, now you have $40. But a lot of that money is getting pocketed. There's a lot of corruption. It's getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. So with blockchain, they have something where there is facial recognition. So it will come and kind of say, okay, this is Mario Rodriguez. And it will pull up all of your data, and it keeps track of the transactions. So Mario, which this is also through cryptocurrency, you know, Mario used $10 yesterday, now he has $40. So that's something that's helping these refugees. Another thing is with giving identities. A lot of women and children in Asia don't have an identity. You know, you don't have an identity. For us as Americans, or, you know, that's not something that we even think about. And without an identity, it makes you much more susceptible for sex trade or getting lost into that whole ring.
Mm-hmm.
And something that blockchain is doing is it is registering who you are through facial recognition. So now you're given an identity. And last thing, and then I'm done with my whole spiel, but it absolutely blows my mind, is like land registration in Central America, Africa, Colombia even. You'll go to buy a house and they're like, great, here's your keys. Oh wait, your house was already sold again and you actually don't own this house. Or, hey, someone's buying this land. Well, what do you mean? It was my grandma's land, my great grandma's land. This land has been in our family forever. Well, where's your documentation? Okay, well, I'm in no name pueblito in Colombia. What do you mean documentation?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have your transaction. We don't have GPS. So through blockchain, they're actually registering identity, your location, different transactions. So once you're able to show that you own this land, you can get rights to health benefits, social security. And that's all through blockchain, which, sorry to go on the rant, but absolutely.
And also imagine corruption, right? Like imagine that our tax money, we know exactly where that money goes because there is a registration for a track for the whole process. Or imagine like we pay taxes and then we program the money that can be used just for specific things. That's gonna be insane. Like for at least for the kind of corruption that we see in Latin America, it's gonna be huge. And I'm from Venezuela. When I was in Venezuela, I went to a restaurant. And they didn't have, we ate, and then the credit card, machine didn't work. So now we have to pay cash, and inflation in Venezuela is insane. So now we have to bring like a bag of money.
Right.
We couldn't do that. So
you know, this guy got me laughed out, and he's like, can you make like a wire transfer? What's a wire? You know, and it was insane. So for this kind of, you know, countries and for this kind of situation, it's gonna have a huge impact. Huge. It's gonna be great.
No, absolutely. All right, so we're going to take one last break, and when we come back, I want to hear what you guys are both obsessed about. Think about it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Bootleg Avocado. We have Elise Barros here, and Hernan Aracena. Co-founder of Effortless and associate of First Rock Capital, that's Elise. Last part of the last section of the podcast tonight. I just want to know from you guys, what are you guys obsessed with right now? Could be anything, you know, anything out there, social media wise, product wise, you know, whatever you got. So Elise, you go first.
My answer of what I'm obsessed about was actually what we just talked about. I jumped the gun a little bit. Uh-huh. It's the potential of blockchain for developing countries. That's what I'm obsessed about right now. On a culinary thing, which is not product or anything tech, I'm absolutely obsessed about it, is putting lime and salt on pineapple.
No. Oh, yeah.
I mean, if we're being honest, that's absolutely, I just ate a bowl of it.
You should
lime and salt on pineapple.
You should do lime, salt, and a little bit of cayenne pepper.
No, well, yeah, but then it's getting into, like, Mexican, you know, like chamoy, and I'm done with all that. But okay. Lime and salt on pineapple, that's what, besides blockchain and developing countries, what I'm all about.
Gotcha. All right, Hernan, your turn.
So I'm really obsessed with espresso, you know, like I have a bunch of barista friends and, you know, I'm brainwashing them with trying to, how can we make the greatest espresso in the whole world? How can we, you know, I mean, we have this thing that the thing is growing here. We can go from the source, you know, and make something incredible. So, I'm really obsessed with that and craftsmanship, you know, like I really love the process of how to make something great. I, you know, last week I went to this place where they have all the process from the bean, you know, to the espresso machine. And I saw the whole process, like, it takes so much, right? It takes so much effort, so much, you know, detail to understand something and make it great. So I really, you know, I respect that craftsmanship. I learned a lot about many of the things that I'm trying to do in tech. I'm really inspired by the food industry. So, you know, I love to try something and get that kick, you know, like even if it's food street, you know, like there is a little banana place here. And, oh my God, I get this kick. I don't know what it is. Probably this is something it's coffee. I don't know. But you get that kick and it's that rush. I mean, it's awesome, right? It creates this amazing memory and this great story that I tell to people. So I'm obsessed with that kind of, you know, attention to details.
Like, yeah, and that's what makes a good food product, you know, and food service, you know, that's what makes a great service out there.
I feel like you have to eat bananas now, man.
And
man,
you should tell the Mate Pico that you gave him a shout out on a podcast. Well, you'll have to tell what.
Yeah, you should. Yeah.
Mate Pico is the play. That
sounds
great. It's better than Bitcoin.
Better than Bitcoin. Wow. Okay. Gotcha. All right. So this is a part of the night that we get to plug our, you know, respective, you know, companies and what we do. So thanks for listening to Bootleg Avocado. Sorry for a little bit of technical difficulty. Just to talk about upcoming episodes, we're going to talk a little bit about branding and marketing down the road, food accelerators, incubators. Also about the vegan movement that's happening, that, you know, there's a lot of people really shifting to, even on the investment side, on vegan products, and then, you know, really finding alternatives to meat in general and proteins and everything else. We're going to talk a little bit more about the country of India, the impact of food there, and how much, you know, obviously it's very tech driven, but things that, you know, there's a food movement actually happening there, happening in that country as well. And then some craft sake movement in the United States. I have Brooklyn Kura in Brooklyn and Proper Sake in Nashville as guests upcoming episodes. Anthony, your turn.
Please visit my website. It's sneakthieves.com. We do restaurant consulting and social media content, research and development products. On Instagram at speak_feast.
Elise, your turn.
Let's see, if you are a startup and you want to reduce your burn and build your tech team out in Latin America, that is kind of our special sauce at First Rock, and send me an email. Oh, you need my email address, which is Elise, E-L-I-S-E, at firstrock.com.
Cool, and I'll put a link to you on the website as well. Anand, your shot.
Awesome. So yeah, if you want to stay focused, you know, and get things done, and you know, you can try Effortless at www.tryeffortless.com. That's it.
It's cool. Really great. It becomes addicting. I use it.
We'll definitely check that out. So like I said, I'll post these links on our website, www.bootlegavocado.com. And we'll be back next week for a different episode.
Wait, Mario.
Yes.
Sorry, I interrupted that whole thing. A really great book for startups to read that gives it from an entrepreneur perspective and a venture capital perspective, mm-hmm. which I thought was a really great book. It puts it into layman's terms, is called Venture Deals.
Yeah, I heard of it. Yep.
Really great book. Absolutely recommend it.
Cool. Anand, what about plugging your empanada place?
If you ever come to Medellin,
I'm getting
on the plane right now.
Oh, you want to tell amazing empanadas, amazing spices, you know, that's the place. El Machapico.
I'm afraid if I go down there, I'll come back married, so I don't know, we'll see.
Mario, why don't we fly down there and record a podcast right from there?
Right from that banana place? Yeah, we can do that.
We can do that, right? We just have to talk to our venture capitalist.
Yeah, that's right. Can we afford that trip? So.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks to all the guests. You know, it was very helpful for all the information that you provided us. And we'll be back hopefully next week with a different topic. Thanks. Have a good night, guys.
Bye.